It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio. Sal Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline. We've got plenty of Bills news, a new defensive lineman, a suspension for Von Miller, and Davante Adams preferring a trade out of Las Vegas. Sal, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. Media day of Sunday, 1 o'clock game, so a regular game week for everyone. I know that's good news for you, as well as the Bills head to Houston. Let's start with the Von Miller news, Sal. The suspension that when it was announced, it's the NFL. I didn't know this to be true or not. They didn't announce right away what the suspension was for, right? And it seemed to be a bit of connecting dots. Like this stems from the incident in last fall, almost a year ago. So when it comes to the Miller news and what this is, you know, people are asking questions about the process the NFL takes. We expected Rashee Rice to get suspended because the league will suspend players even in circumstances when charges are not brought against them or charges are dropped. The league is not, I guess it's not rare for the league to do something like this.
No, not at all. The league does their own investigation on a lot of different things. And if they feel that you violated their own personal conduct policies, then there'll be a suspension. It is not uncommon for these suspensions to happen over a year after an incident. This particular suspension, as you pointed out, we don't have the official information as to why or for what it stemmed from. However, I mean, guys, unless there was something that was so far under the radar that no one knew anything about in addition to what happened in November of 2023, I would have to also say that it's got to stem from that. I mean, it's not, the Bills have not officially said that. The NFL has not officially said that. We don't know that for sure, but it just makes too much sense. I mean, there's been nothing else that we know of that's been reported anywhere that's happened since 2023 and when he was arrested. So I think it's logical to connect those dots like a lot of people are doing. So we'll have to kind of assume that for now, but it is an assumption, just so everybody's clear. That being said, yeah, I think about the Rashee Rice thing as well. And I see it and people say, well, here's Rashee Rice and what he did. And he's still, you know, he obviously is injured right now, but he's still out there playing football. And my thought is, well, I guess that would mean that maybe next year he would be suspended once they conclude their investigation. The NFL, the Bills, the league, they usually wait for the legal process to play out as long as possible and then make some sort of determination with their own investigation about the personal conduct policy. So we'll see. So I guess it's a very long way of just saying that we're still finding out, you know, to make sure that this is about what happened in November of 2023, but I just can't see it being about anything else at this point.
Yeah, Von played last year, right past this. Of course, he came back from the injury, he played. So anyone wondering, like, why does it take this long? It's the same, it's not that different from Rice in Kansas City, who was playing, and many speculated it would happen later this year or next year. Sal, when these allegations came out against Miller and the Bills were asked about it, was there any sort of conversation about we let the league take the lead on this, or any conversation about because the team could decide to act? And if we go back to Matt Araiza with the Bills, I mean, he was cut because of the allegations against him. Has since been, I mean, whatever version of,
well, that's the only way they can act. That's the way they can act is by releasing. Like, the league is not going to have, the team is not going to have their own violation of the personal conduct policy. You know what I mean? Like, that's not, the way the team would act is if they were to release somebody. But yes, the team has been very consistent since this happened to let the legal process play out and let the law enforcement and the league kind of take the lead on everything that's happening here. So, and then Von, charges were ultimately dropped. And Javon was actually asked about this offseason, and he really only said, hey, charges were dropped and, you know, moving forward here. And there was nothing there. So I don't know if, you know, like, to me, it kind of came out of the blue, but at the same time, there was a lot of question about why he reworked his contract. And when that happened, there was a lot of speculation that maybe the Von and the Bills knew that something could wind up happening this year. That was never confirmed or anything, but a lot of people speculated that was the case as well. So there was always something lingering under there, I guess I'd say, that there was a possibility. And then yesterday it kind of came out, like, and you're like, wait a minute, what happened here? But I think you connect all of those breadcrumbs back that way.
Yeah, I think I saw the contract thing, Sal, that he maybe he knew this was coming or thought it could be coming, and that might have helped him renegotiate the contract, because he went from last year, the way last year's deal was worked, he would have lost $5 million the way the suspension happened, versus now I think it's like $300,000.
Right, and overall, though, it was, I think, less money the Bills had to pay out, a pay cut. Remember, that was the talk of it, a pay cut. So, yeah, I think when that happened, there was some underlying, hey, is this something that could be related to maybe a suspension down the road, and people speculating. So, you know, we haven't heard from Brandon Bean yet. We don't know all of that. So if and when we do about all this, I'm sure that that will be asked. In the meantime, the Bills will be without Von Miller for the next four games.
Yeah, and like I said, not to make light of the situation, because you can the affidavits out there, like, the details are pretty gross if they are indeed true from what Von did last November. But now going forward, Sal, like, replacing him on the field, how equipped do you think they are to replacing him as a pass rusher? It is interesting, too, that, like, we're coming off a game where he only played 9 snaps. I think the matchup probably dictated that, so coming off a game where he wasn't really involved that much, but otherwise he had been making a significant impact on the field.
Yeah, I thought he was playing some pretty good football, and he had a sack in each of the first three games, but he wasn't on the field a ton. And then, as you pointed out, Joe, really over the last, last game, overall, I'm looking at snap counts here, 35% on the season. I just want to go game by game here. He went from 47 to 38 to 36 to 15. He was only on the field for 9 snaps. Is it possible? I mean, look, this came down on a Tuesday. I'm sure that, like, is it possible that all of a sudden the Bills were told on Monday night? Sure. Also, they could maybe have been aware that this could be happening, and maybe that's why. Maybe they wanted to start kind of preparing and getting, guys ready and getting some reps for other guys. But the score also was kind of out of hand, right? So at what point is Von, at his age, making an impact in a game like that? So there's a lot of things you could kind of look at that and just kind of have your own, kind of judgments about how that went down. To answer your question, Joe, about how equipped they are, well, with Juwan Smoot back, it helps a lot, obviously, because he's a guy that fits into the rotation. Casey Tuhill, I think, has played some pretty good football. Greg Rousseau, AJ Epinesa are pretty much your starters here, I think, on a regular basis, although there will be a rotation. And Javon Solomon's come in and played pretty well at times. Now, they did sign another defensive lineman, Zion Logue, from the Atlanta Falcons. He's a defensive tackle, so with Von on the suspension list, that gives them 10 defensive linemen, 5 listed as edge rushers, 5 listed as defensive tackles.
That was my next question. Okay, so no roster move is necessary because of Von's suspension.
Correct.
So Zion Logue is a 6th-round pick this year. So the Bills are adding, and he goes right to the active roster, Sal. Is there a rule about how long he has to be on the active roster?
4 weeks.
Okay.
Or 3 weeks. I have to go back and look. I think it might be 3 weeks, actually. But he's guaranteed 3 game checks. So he has to, they have to pay him for 3 weeks. Once you do that, that's part of the reason why teams just, you can't just, it's to protect teams from just saying, oh, we just want a guy for 1 week from your practice squad.
Yeah.
Well, if you do that, you got to put him on your 53, and you got to guarantee him 3 game checks, 3 weeks. And if you do, you can move on from him, but I believe his spot has to count on your roster for all 3 weeks. So, like, you could physically say, like, we're terminating your contract for whatever reason, but I believe that that spot on the roster still counts. So 3 weeks is the minimum he has to be with the Buffalo Bills in that capacity. So 3 weeks for his roster spot to actually be taken up by him in some capacity.
What about for this week with that matchup? Not having Von and the defensive line getting a pass rush against C.J. Stroud. Do you feel like they're going to be that's going to be tested right away? Because the Texans are definitely a team that has been dropping back almost as anybody in the league.
Sure, I mean, no doubt about it. This is a different matchup though than last week, right? I mean, like, yeah, they'll want to run the ball. We'll see about Joe Mixon. That's a big one for them this week. He didn't play again last week. This is not the Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson offense, but this is a very good offense with a quarterback that I think is really, really good, who's very young. But they're not going to come at you the way the Ravens are. So I think that, you know, the Ravens can keep you off balance a little bit, a lot. You know, you have to, obviously they come up with that big run early in the game, and that even makes it more so to kind of be on your heels a little bit. This is a team that is going to want to throw the ball, but the Bills are better equipped here in this matchup than they were against the Ravens in that matchup, just considering how different the Ravens are compared to everyone else. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see. I mean, you got to make plays, but I don't think it's the same thing as last week.
803-0550. If you want to get a call in with Sal, we can bring in Jimmy in Miami is going to jump in for a minute. Hey, Jimmy, good morning.
Hey, guys. You know, this season seems to be, and I know it's only the fourth game, and people are panicking, and I'm not panicking yet, but it's like a movie you saw once before, and you're watching this movie, and all of a sudden, after about a half hour, you think, gee, I think I saw this movie already. But it just seems like it's suspiciously shaping up a lot like the last two seasons, where our receiving core has just struggled to get open, create separation. And when we come up against a tough team with a good defense and that has firepower, we can't go toe-to-toe with these guys and keep up. And if they score 28 points, we have to score 30. If they score 34, we got to score 35, and we just can't seem to do it. And I know the phrase, everyone eats, is kind of cute and stuff like that, but we really don't have the receiving core right now that is we don't have anyone in our receiving core, a number one guy that's keeping defensive coordinators up at night. If you just give me one other point to make, if you look back in the draft in 2020, in 2020, the Bills drafted Greg Rousseau in the first round. And then we drafted Boogie Basham in round two. Well, I mean, the Basham draft was a waste. I mean, it was a big whiff. In that same round, in that same draft, Nico Collins was available in the third round, and Amon-Ra St. Brown was available in the fourth round, and neither of those guys were on the Bills' radar. And then the following year, in 21, they go defense.
Hold on, 21 was that draft, by the way. They drafted Greg Rousseau in 2021, not 2020.
Yeah, and Jimmy, thanks. I'm going to jump in and pick up on this point because this does lead us in a direction we want to go. Sal, all right, so he said a couple different things there. The idea of the seeing the movie before. I kind of jumped on a Field Yates tweet yesterday, a little bit of snark. But
I saw it.
But all I was saying was, like, I don't think people are freaking out about a loss to Baltimore. I think it's a lot of what Jimmy said there, which is it's early. And I'm not one that is panicked right now. I think the receiving room has plenty of room for growth from Keon Coleman, from Curtis Samuel as well. I mean, Samuel being a part of this offense seems important. I mean, Matt Collins, MBS, there might be some big time limitations there, but I think there's definitely room for growth in the Bills pass catching core. And, you know, Dalton Kincaid too, not for nothing. Like, they can get him more involved. I think what Jimmy's point is that whether it's that we are here again wondering about their pass catchers. You know, is Devontae Adams something that they should think about? Because we've had this conversation 1,000 times, whether it's Beckham or DeAndre Hopkins, and we're right back here after four games. I don't think it's the loss. I think it's just the same conversation that's kind of lingered for a while. And that's why he brings up, like, you know, Basham and all that hindsight. I think there's a lot of context there.
Sure. I mean, like, we could do this all the time, right? Well, they should have drafted this guy. They should have drafted that guy. It happens every year. With every team, by the way. Like, it's just, you don't know who's going to be the best players in the end. You do your best job. So we could do this all the time. Gabe Davis was a good player for them for 4 years. They got him in the fourth round in that 2020 draft. He's one of the better fourth round wide receivers over the last many years, actually, to be quite honest with you. Greg Rousseau has turned out to be a really good player at an important position for them. I'd love to have Amon-Ra St. Brown on this team. There's no doubt. We could do that about a lot of things. I do want to point out, I mean, I know last week did not go well. There's no doubt. There's no hiding from that. They are still the second highest scoring team in the NFL at 30.5 points a game. That's what they're averaging. Yes. I mean, if the other team scores 25, you got to score 26. If the other team scores 9, you got to score 10, right? Like the Denver Broncos did last week. There's no doubt about that from the call. That's what it is. You got to score more points, whatever it is. I think last week really, really shook a lot of people because of how tough it was for them to move the ball, how tough it was for them to score. And you don't hide from that. And there's no doubt. And it showed. And I'm sure it won Bills drive. It even made them kind of go, okay, what do we need here? What do we got to do? I also think that sometimes, you know, you can have a massive overreaction to that, whatever game it is. And you have to be very careful about not having a massive overreaction to that. So it was one game that, you know, did not go well in a lot of different ways. I think you have to be very careful in a 17-game season with any team, whether the Buffalo Bills. Again, I try to tell people all the time, look around the league. No roster is perfect. The Bills had a bad game. Everybody, like, there's only one undefeated team, right? Is it one now? Is the Chiefs, right? They're the only one remaining.
Minnesota.
Thank you. They're looking really good too, by the way. But I mean, like, you know, it's 3-1, 30.5 points a game. One game was very bad. There's no doubt about that. I think you have to be careful about having massive overreactions to one game. Now, the trick you can have is if you don't have some sort of reaction, then you could drop another one, and you're like, why didn't you address it? There's no doubt about that. I get it, but I don't think that necessarily you have to all of a sudden change a whole bunch of things about your philosophy or your roster because of Sunday night.
Yeah, I think the philosophy they're in right now, this is, I mean, Bean has called it a transition year. That's the big $64,000 question, Sal, is if they get off to a good enough start, let's say they beat Houston, they beat the Jets, they're 7-1, and the Chiefs look vulnerable because they don't have any receivers. You know,
And the division stinks.
Like, could they all of a sudden say, like, yeah, it's a transition year. I'm not going to mortgage the whole future, but maybe I should push in a little bit where I can because, you know, as everybody says, hey, if you have Josh Allen, you have a chance. And no doubt Brandon Bean would think that as well. You know, I wonder if how the season goes, you know, we could say it from a need standpoint, or we could say it from a, hey, we think we have a better chance to win it because of how the board has fallen. And we might want to go in a little bit more. We point out they did this with Kelvin Benjamin, that trade in the year.
I think it's a great example.
They broke the drought. It was a team that was rebuilding, and they went out and spent a third-round pick to get a guy.
Do you think, I mean, I don't know this, you know, without asking him, but I would assume maybe the Bills did not expect to be making a trade for Kelvin Benjamin when that season started. But right. What I do remember about that season was when they traded Sammy Watkins and they traded Ronald Darby, and everybody said they're tanking. The Bills kept saying, we're not tanking. We're going to be competitive. Like, that's our goal. But it's a transition. That was a transition. I don't know if they used that word. That was a massive transition year. But the transition wasn't to be bad. The transition was to be competitive in a different way with a different roster. And I think that that's what Brandon Bean meant when, I think it was with you guys, right? When he was on with you, yeah. He said it, yep. To be honest with you. When he was at training camp, he said, it's a transition year. Transition can be taken a lot of ways. Some people took that as meaning, oh, transition, step back. I think it meant more like in 2017. Hey, we're still going to be competitive. It's just going to look a lot different than what a lot of people thought it would look like. And then once they got off to a nice start, they said, oh, you know what? We're actually in this thing. Let's go trade for Kelvin Benjamin. Well, maybe even for the Bills this year, you know, look, new information has you thinking different ways. Yep. I say all the time, people, you know, the old takes exposed is fun, right? We all like old takes. I interviewed the guy that actually runs it. It's really funny. But what happens on Old Takes Exposed is people find opinions that you had maybe 3-4 years ago and say, oh my God, you were, and laugh at you. And maybe that person says, well, wait a minute, I did think that. And then I watched and I learned and opinion changed. It's okay. Changing your opinion is a healthy, good thing.
That's right.
You don't have to have the same opinion all the time about everything. If you think Josh Allen stunk coming out of the draft and he's going to be horrible, and then you watched him for 2 years and you said, you know what? I was wrong about that, and I think he's really good. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I've said a million times, like, I'm not sorry I was wrong. I was wrong about Allen in college. What do I have to apologize for, you know?
So in this case, I'm saying, like, maybe the Bills went into this year thinking, okay, transition year, we're going to be competitive, let's see how it goes, and then all of a sudden, oh my God, the Jets, look at the Dolphins, look at the Jets, look at the Patriots, and the conference is down compared to what a lot of people thought. Maybe we can actually even have more of an opportunity to strike and do something here to take advantage of all this when maybe they didn't think about that earlier.
There's also, Sal, you know, we like to use the phrase confirming your priors. If you're someone that thought the receiving core was missing some pieces. A loss to Baltimore might have your antenna up. And if you're someone that thought the Bills can't stop the run, guess what? Your antenna are up. You know, you want to see more help at defensive tackle, or you want to see safety be replaced, because right now at safety there are some major concerns about what they're doing. So, you know, a loss, I don't think it's people freaking out about a loss. I think it's people that key in on maybe weaker spots on the roster that have been exposed. Last year, they made the trade for Rasul Douglas, and that's a great deadline trade. And what brought that about? Injury, right? It was a need. Hey, we have a team that's trying to win the Super Bowl here. We lost our top corner. We've got to go get one, because without Rasul Douglas last year, they're probably in a heap of trouble, even though they ultimately did go out in the same spot. You know, that Douglas trade, looking back, you got a year and a half of a top-level cornerback.
Yeah, for sure. So obviously you're leading up to a little bit about Davante Adams here in this context.
He's a
fascinating player to me for this, because I think he's so good. He's also 31, about to be 32 years old. And the Bills have kind of intentionally gone to a transition of getting a little bit younger and not going with a, you know, true number one receiver. As the caller did correctly point out, the things that, you know, I disagree with the caller, he was right that, like, you know, there's this everybody eats is great. But what happens when you really need someone to eat and you got to find your guy that's going to really eat and do a great job against the defense and at a critical third and six in the fourth quarter, who are you going to? And man, that's a Davante Adams, right? That's a Stephon Diggs. And my question has been all along, who is that guy? If that happens, is that Dalton Kincaid? I don't know who that guy is.
Can I ask you,
Davante Adams, if he's on the team, by the way. But again, 32 years old. And they've kind of gone away from that. So I just think it's a fascinating discussion.
Yeah, and it probably won't end anytime soon. I mean, he's asked for a trade. I want to ask you about Kincaid before we go, Sal, because I had Joe look into this for me, because I don't think anybody is disappointed with Kincaid as a player, but maybe usage. I mean, he did not get a lot of usage early last year, and here we are into this year. You know, week one, he gets focused on. Like, he gets a lot of attention. Do you feel like the Bills should still be looking to do more with him?
I think the answer is yes, but I think what's happening here partly is when you do have an everybody eats mentality, you know, we've always, how about, you know, this has happened before where we've said, is there enough footballs to go around, right? When you have a whole bunch of guys that are really good and you say there's enough footballs to go around, are there enough snap counts to go around? It's great to have everybody eats and everybody plays, but if you're going to do that and you want to have all these different guys getting on the field, I think you can kind of get lost in the, well, we're so focused on that, you know, there's some really good players here that we got to make sure are on the field. Curtis Samuel is this for me. And Joe Brady said on Monday in a Zoom call with us, he was asked specifically about Curtis Samuel. I know your question's about Kincaid, but it's the same thing to me.
Yeah.
Which is, he said he's got to do a better job of getting the ball in his hands and basically said he's got to do a better job of getting him on the field in order to make that happen. Like, when you have all these different guys, you can only put five eligible, you know, guys on the field.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, who's it going to be? And if you're always talking about everybody eats, well, there's only a certain number of snap counts. So, at some point, you have to make a decision, if this is happening, I think, to reduce who that is. And you texted me about MVS last week, because he was actually on the field more than I thought he was, right? At the end of the day, they just didn't use him. But again, like, I mean, there might have to be a moment where Joe Brady says, it's great that everybody eats, but this week this guy can't eat because I need this other guy in the field a lot. You know what I mean? Like, that might have to happen.
For Samuel, it's funny. Like, Samuel, his career in Carolina, his depth of target was 12, 14, and 7. And in the last 2 years in Washington, it was 6.5 yards average depth of target. And this year, it's 3.7. Like, he had one other season, a shortened season, that was low. But, I mean, Samuel, I think, Sal, the idea has to be that he's not just your behind-the-line-of-scrimmage kind of guy.
I mean, I would hope not. I think he's a legit wide receiver. I mean, is he a Davante Adams or Stephon Diggs? No. He can do a lot of things, though. And, I mean, you know, this stuff about putting him, you know, in gadgets and all that, that's great, because he does create matchups and problems when you do that. But I also think you can line him up on the outside and he can win. Like, maybe not on a every down basis all the time, but yeah, I think that can happen. I'm looking at average length of reception. Keon Coleman leads the Bills. Keon Coleman is eighth in the NFL. His average on all the passes he's caught, his average length, this is not average yards per reception, it's average length of the air that it travels.
Area, average 13, air yards, yeah.
Average air yards on just his catches, not his targets. You know what I mean, Joe?
Yeah.
13.13 is eighth in the NFL. You have to scroll all the way down to Khalil Shakir at 88th is the next, 4.94.
Yeah. Set up the week for us. Like, injured guys we've kind of been through. Is Shakir someone to monitor this week, too?
Yeah.
Because he obviously had his ankle heavily taped on Sunday.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think he was quite right after that, the rest of the game. It was tough for him. I mean, he toughed it out. We know he's a really tough dude, right? We see it every week from him. But it's certainly something, and, you know, Sean McDermott said he fought through it. They said they'll take it day to day, day by day, which is encouraging, which to me, like, okay, you'll probably, maybe today he doesn't practice or he's limited. We'll see. We get out there. McDermott at noon today will have more clarity on these things. 12:30 p.m. is practice. Terrell Bernard is expected to practice this week again like he did last week at some capacity. I think the big one we're monitoring here is Taron Johnson. Does Taron Johnson practice this week or not? Does that lend itself to trending towards playing this week, or is it yet another week before he comes back, maybe against the Jets, where you'll have another 8 days because they play on Monday night next week? And then Taylor Rapp, obviously, in concussion protocol. And, you know, it doesn't mean he can't practice, but because there are certain steps, he could be out there. But we'll obviously monitor all of that.
Very good. Thank you, Sal.
You got it, guys.
Sal Capaccio, we went very late. Sorry about that. 803-0550, our number. Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast next.
You know, we got off to a little bit of a slow start there, in particular with the long run that we allowed to Derrick Henry. And then, you know, that environment ratcheted up even more than it was already. And again, if you can get off to a good start early in the game and quiet the crowd a little bit and get into a rhythm, that certainly helps. And we've been able to do that at points, I think, most of the time this season, in fact, but yesterday, not so much.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott. One way they could have maybe done that, you know, people don't think it changes the outcome of the game, but one way you could have done that is maybe go for a 4th-and-2 at the 50-yard line neighborhood instead of punting it away to Derrick Henry so he could run at 87 yards. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. Jeremy and Joe, good morning. Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, joins us for our weekly chat to, you know, look back a little bit, look forward to Houston. Joe, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Jeremy.
When you look back at the Baltimore game, you know, whether it's the Devontae Adams trade conversation or whatever, I think a lot of Bills fans say, why is everyone freaking out? I don't know if it's really freaking out so much as just reacting to a team they think is pretty good. You know, you go 3-0, all of a sudden the expectations kind of went again from transition year to, hey, we're back. And I think Bills fans might want to stay there, you know, being back. It's a compliment to get this kind of scrutiny, I think. So when you look at what happened in that game, we asked this question yesterday. What's real and what's no big deal? What did you come away with from that game? What was real and what's no big deal?
Well, I think the real would be the assignment of Baltimore as a contending team on the road in a short week with a team that I think is really engineered with their offense to expose some of your issues on defense. I think that was the reality of what the concern was. And I thought the Bills had a very poor defensive game plan in terms of presenting light boxes and neutral boxes to heavy personnel rushing offense that includes unicorns and Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry and Patrick Ricard as a fullback. And I don't think that they were ready to be able to defend that in an intelligent way. And I thought that put a lot of stress on their offense. And I was concerned about how the Bills would match up with the Ravens, but I thought the offense would be better. I thought they would score some points and kind of take away from what Baltimore could expose with their offense against the Bills' defense, but the game script completely got away from the Bills. And just like we enjoyed watching the Bills' defense tee off against the Jaguars and Dolphins as that game got out of hand, that's what the Ravens were able to do to the Bills. And so I think the reality is game scripts matter, matchups matter, game plans matter, and I think the Ravens are the team that got the better of the Bills that night. And I think the Ravens are uniquely built. They're one of one in how they can stress the Bills with their decisions on how they're going to play defense, and they'll have to have a better strategy moving forward. But I think you look at it for what it is within the context of that game and realize that the Bills are on pace for 12 wins and they looked really good for 3 games and had a stinker in one of them.
So if the Ravens are uniquely built to challenge the Bills defensively and they have come with a better game plan, how about what the Ravens did defensively? Do you expect Did the Bills run into a problem you think you might see again? That's not exactly a unicorn kind of game plan against the Bills. And what can they do to beat something like that, outside of, you know, game script being a big part of it potentially?
Yeah, that matters a lot for how Baltimore was able to play very aggressive with how they loaded their fronts, how they threatened pressure and allowed them to play very free with a lead on defense. I mean, they led by two scores for 75% of the game. They led for everything after the Bills' first drive. I mean, that's a great position to play defense from. So I think that matters a ton. But the Bills were just in a lot of conflict, I think, offensively. They couldn't seize momentum. Of course, they had two big drops, terrible trick play call. I think it's fair to call out some cowardly punts. I think it was more that than it was anything the Bills were not capable of doing offensively. And I think probably my biggest frustration was just how they couldn't figure out protection. And they've kind of lived in this world the first 3 weeks of the year where they were fine with free runners. Josh Allen's been pressured a lot this year, but it didn't really matter because Josh Allen was able to negotiate those free runners, and it just didn't matter. In this game, the Ravens were able to get complimentary pressure off the edge and up the middle, and Josh Allen just didn't have a lot of room to operate and make people miss in the pocket, and it cost them. And you know, I thought you saw a lot of issues with communication up front, where even though the Ravens didn't blitz that much, a pretty normal blitz rate in the low 20s, the threat of pressure just put the Bills' offensive line in a bind. And I think you look specifically at Osiris Torrence as a guy that has habitually been twisted up in pass pro this year with handling stunts and pressure looks and where to pass off and where to step. And he's been kind of an issue. And then I think you saw, you know, for the first time this year, Spencer Brown had some issues against Kyle Van Noy. I mean, really kind of ate his lunch on a couple of reps that wind up really being costly for the Bills. And so that forces Joe Brady to keep in more eligibles. They're doing seven-man protections. Well, if you have a seven-man protection, that means that you only got three out in routes. And if they're not blitzing, you know, they've got seven over three. I mean, you're going to be able to cover that. I don't care if you have the three greatest receivers in the NFL. You're not going to cover against seven when you have three-man routes and you're keeping in all these players to block and they're not getting it done. So, yeah, they had some issues. But I think it's that stuff as opposed to anything the Bills are lacking that's going to be an issue moving forward.
Have you thought about, Joe, the trick play and in the context of, like, what it was trying to do? Like, do you have a sense of what, if it had gone well, was Allen supposed to be, like, around the edge? Was he supposed to be throwing the ball from, like, where he did on the left? Like, have you thought about, like, what they were trying to accomplish by that exact play design?
If I can go Sean McDermott here for you, that's probably a better question for Joe Brady.
yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's a deplorable play call. And it's not even that it's a result. Like, you don't look at the result and say, well, it was bad because of the fact that Josh Allen got clocked and there was a strip sack and all that. Like, that's not the problem. It was just a very bad decision. You finally had some momentum. Like, you were moving the ball and you came out of the second half. You got back-to-back three and outs. You scored a touchdown. Like, you had some good things going. Like, it felt like the momentum was coming. And boy, you stripped it right away. And you know, people talk a lot about trick plays, and I am just not a fan, not with Josh Allen. And I've said this on my podcast, like, Josh Allen running regular plays is the trick play. You don't have to do goofy stuff to try to get offense. Josh Allen can do that for you. Just do regular stuff. And I think the intent, they hand it off to what Samuel gives it to Josh Allen, and I think through that action, they wanted the Ravens to not be mindful of Keon Coleman and Mac Hollins running down the field. And nobody was fooled, man. Those guys stayed leveraged over top. Nobody was open. They had pretty much a wall of coverage, you know, capped over top of those two receivers. If Josh Allen uncorks that ball, I'm not really sure what happens. I think it's probably an interception and you have better field position on the turnover regardless. So it was terrible design, terrible intent. The Ravens weren't fooled. And just a very silly, silly moment.
We saw a couple nice catches from Coleman, a couple more flash plays from him. Yeah. A lot of conversation, though, Joe, right now about Curtis Samuel and his role in the offense. So as we move forward, you know, they're going to continue to talk about everybody eats. But in a game like that, who is it, or maybe even not like that, whatever, just moving forward, are you looking for more attention for one guy, whether that's Coleman or Kincaid or Curtis Samuel, because they brought him in and he's on the team for a couple of years here. Okay. And the idea was he can do a lot of things. And right now he's like the gadget guy. So if it's Samuel or if it's one of the others, who are you looking for more from?
I think the answer is yes, Jeremy. I think the more that those things come together, the more better this offense is going to be. And right now, Dalton Kincaid, there's a lot of gravity on him. I know we talked about it a lot coming out of Arizona, but hasn't really changed. Like, teams know how talented Kincaid is. I think they know that the Bills want to get him the ball, and there's just a lot of gravity. He runs routes, and there's high lows on him, and zones are rolled to him. It's definitely a thing. And I think the more other things, the more ancillary parts of this offense and this passing game can come together, the more helpful it's going to be in softening up those looks for Kincaid, for him to really take over. And I do think the connection that Josh showed with Keon Coleman on those two back shoulder throws, that's a big deal. As that continues to happen and defenses respect that more, and that has more attention, that's going to help Kincaid. As they get things going with Curtis Samuel, you know, that's going to be really helpful as well, really unique player. And I think, you know, that time he missed at the end of camp with the turf toe combined with all the new, right? I mean, so much new on this offense really kind of made it difficult for that to take off the way you wanted it to. And you know, I think it's fair to look at everything and say it probably was unreasonable to think that everything would be the full version of itself in the first 4 weeks of the season. So I think that stuff has to evolve. And as it does, it's going to make the overall operation even better and certainly allow the Bills to get Kincaid going in the ways that they want to.
And maybe Shakir for this as well. Last one, Joe, before we let you go. Like, the outside, the boundary receivers has always been a bit of a, you know, are they good enough there? Can they make it work? Do they kind of have to, because that's the way that you'll get Kincaid and Shakir the room they need to operate?
Yeah, if you can win those perimeter battles, right, that's going to soften up the middle of the field. There's no question, right? You got to find ways to get defenses in some different looks that are going to draw coverage and open up your spacing, and it all goes hand in hand. And I think, you know, there's been really a lot of really good through three games. It certainly, this one against Baltimore takes away from what feels like a really good start. But yes, as those perimeter battles become more wins for the Bills, softens up the middle of the field.
How about the Houston matchup?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly don't want to lose two in a row and have tiebreakers, playoff seedings, when you think about Houston and Baltimore, teams that you expect to kind of be in the mix. I think Houston's – they're 3-1. I think they've been a little vulnerable. I think their passing offense is extremely potent. I don't think they're going to be able to run the ball like Baltimore did, and I think they have some issues with their offensive line. I think their run defense has been pretty poor. I don't think their pass defense has been – particularly strong either. They've given up quite a bit. Actually, the fourth most passing touchdowns against them this year. So I think the Bills are going to have some opportunities. I think the game script will be a lot more even. And obviously, everyone's ready for the big return of Tim Settle against the Buffalo Bills.
Yes.
So yeah, we'll definitely have a lot to pay attention to.
Tim Settle. Thanks, Joe.
All right, guys. Thank you.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. We chat every Wednesday. Make sure you're listening to Joe every day. He does a great job. And love having him on. Love chatting. Coming up at 8, Lindy Ruff. First ever guest from Prague? Possible. Mm. Meanwhile, Joe had the big news. Aleš Kotelik and Jaroslav Spacek will be attending the game.
Yes.
Let's go.
Not like I broke it, like texting Aleš Kotelik or anything. I just saw it on Twitter, but yes.
The Sabres tweeted that.
Kotelik, right? And Spacek.
The Spacho Man. He'll be there. That's perfect for the vibes.
That's the one you're more excited about?
Spacho Man? Come on.
Kotelik. Everyone loves Kotelik.
There's only one Spacho Man.
King.
803-0550, more your calls. A little Sabres chatter with the Sabres head coach coming up as well here on WGR.
Fast question. Hey, you order food at a restaurant.
And it's brought to you by the Spacho Man. You're missing the Spacho Man here.
Oh my gosh, the Spacho Man was playing and I just didn't even realize it. Turn it up.
I want to be a Spacho, Spacho Man. I've got to be a Spacho. Every man wants to be a Spacho, Spacho Man. A good man on the power play, always in demand. Skating in the morning, go Yarrow, go. Played for the Oilers, now in Buffalo. You can best believe that he's a Spacho Man. Ready to hit, score, and pass the best he can.
Hey, 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 hey.
Spacek's going to be at the game on Friday or Saturday. Do we know which one? He'll just be there?
Oh, actually, I don't know.
Whatever. We found that out.
One of them.
Jaroslav Spacek and Aleš Kotelik will be there. Can Kotelik go in the shootout if they need him?
Oh, that would
legacy,
be so cool.
New NHL rule. Legacy players are allowed in the shootout.
Yeah.
Who says no?
Totally in.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Tommy, tell me this would be a bad idea.
One of your three has to be a legacy player that's in attendance that night. So you have to bring a former player to every game.
Oh, my God. This is the best idea in the history of sports.
Yeah. This is like the... Let's copy... Once in a while, we should copy wrestling in sports a little bit. Wrestling,
yes.
How often do they... Hey, here comes Stone Cold.
Yep.
Who retired 15, 20 years ago, and here he comes down the walkway.
Tonight's legend of the game is J.P. Dumont. He'll be the third shooter in the shootout if it gets that far.
Yes. Oh, I love it.
It's like the emergency backup goal.
Yes. All right.
But more fun.
Anyway, you had a food question before we get to Lindy Ruff on the other side?
Really quick. You order food at a restaurant. You get to the restaurant, and you realize, oh, no, I ordered at a different location. How far, what's the furthest away that other location would have to be for you to still go get it?
I mean, you're talking restaurant?
Yeah.
Not a coffee. Because a coffee, you could just say, like, I'll just order another coffee.
Restaurant. This is dinner. I did this last night, in a way.
I would drive 10 to 15 minutes.
Okay. So if it's 20 minutes, you're saying, I'm just going to eat the loss, and I'm going to do something else.
It does depend how much you spent. But, yeah.
One meal for yourself, $15. Do you go 20 minutes?
15 to 20 minutes each way.
Okay. But if it's a half hour, you're not.
No, going. No, I'm not.
All right, I went 20, but it was a debate. Like, I was on the fence.
Depends how hungry you are. You're so hungry, like, yeah. I'm not going to wait a half hour. I'm just going to eat.
Yeah.
All right. 20 minutes. You did it.
20 minutes. Yep. I don't think I would have gone further, though.
Sabres head coach Lindy Ruff, when we return, they are in Prague, gearing up for their global series with two games against the New Jersey Devils Friday, Saturday. Jeremy and Joe, some Sabres chatter next.